Technology of Leadership. Section 3, The Social Motives.
Motives determine much more than our feelings. They determine our passions, and those passions make us behave differently. Passionate thoughts and feelings fire the brain and drive us, moment by moment. McClellan referred to motives as the feeling side of commitment. Everyone has these three motives: the need for achievement, the need for affiliation, and the need for power, present in their personality. But most of us have one motive that exerts a stronger influence on our thoughts and subsequently our behavior. We refer to the strongest motive as the dominant motive. To better understand the dominant motive, let's look at three different people who work in the same company and are involved in the same project. The project, however, is in trouble. It's over budget, behind schedule, and in general disarray. Later, they will meet with their boss. These examples are caricatures and are exaggerated to make a point. Listen to the thought process each goes through as they drive into work. Mr. Need for Achievement is driving in traffic that's a nightmare. The radio says there's an accident ahead. Within minutes of being stuck, he has identified two alternate routes to work, and he's off the roadway in a flash. He can't figure out why all these other people would sit in traffic when there's obviously a better way. Now he's way ahead of the game, feeling better for his efforts. Listen to his achievement thought process.
It's no good that we take forever to decide everything. Meetings about meetings. If I had the job, I'd get it done in no time. I already have the fastest turnaround of any of the managers. I don't know what the others do with their time.
Meanwhile, on another road, Mr. Need for Affiliation has stopped at a bakery. He's concerned that his group might be demoralized by the project's poor performance. As he looks through the bakery case, he remembers everyone's preferences and buys donuts for his coworkers. Listen to the affiliation thought process.
One of the manager's wives just had a baby, and the boss didn't even take a moment to congratulate him. He really doesn't seem to care about people. A dozen donuts should let them know that someone cares about them.
On a different road, Miss Need for Power is seething. She believes that the team is trying to sabotage her. As she drives, she has mentally outlined precisely what she would do to make the team members get in line, including specific things she would say to each one. Catch the power thinking in this next example.
Oh, they can't make me the scapegoat. I didn't work this hard for all these years to go down in flames. The first thing I'm going to do is tell the boss exactly what he needs to do. I know others will support me. The guy is lost trying to get into all the details. That's what he's got people for.
This little vignette shows how a person's thoughts, not the specifics, but the themes of their thoughts, play themselves out in all kinds of situations. Mr. Need for Achievement constantly thought about how to do things better. Mr. Need for Affiliation's first concern was typically how things were going between people. And Ms. Need for Power was trying to influence and have impact on others. So what does this information about social motives have to do with leadership? Why should you bother to identify a person's dominant motive profile? It's not to diagnose psychological conditions. It's to help you lead and manage your people so they find intrinsic satisfaction from doing their jobs. In simple terms, this means you are meeting the needs of their motives. If you can understand and engage in activities that satisfy your own motives, you'll be better able to recognize motives in others and allow them to satisfy what drives them. When we recognize and address the motives in others, they're motivated. Brad Spencer shares how we can do that.
Essentially, the way to understand someone's dominant motive is to understand the why behind their behavior. People are telling us all the time. They're well advertised, but we've been socialized out of picking up these sometimes subtle, sometimes very, very strong clues. You're far better at reading people's motives than you probably recognize. Someone who's avoiding conflict is probably telling you about affiliation motivation. Someone who's constantly in competition, trying to meet a standard, is probably telling you in many ways about achievement. Someone's looking to influence you, or someone's concerned about status, is telling you about power motivation, and it comes out in their language, comes out in what they're interested in, and what they're trying to accomplish.
During the workshop, you receive three colored cards to help you learn how to measure each of the social motives. The cards outline the images that need to be present to score for a motive. We emphasize that this is important but detailed information. It might be a good idea to refer back to the cards as you listen. Need for achievement images include outperforming someone else, meeting or surpassing an internal standard of excellence, being involved in a unique, innovative accomplishment, advancing a career or long-term goal. To repeat, achievement imagery means the achievement motive is present. If one of these four processes is not present, no matter how much you would like to make it so, the achievement motive is not there. A sample of achievement behaviors includes when people get energy from working toward goals, set challenging goals, optimize in all areas of life, take personal responsibility, want frequent and specific feedback, alter behavior on the basis of feedback, are frustrated when unable to get data on results, choose experts over friends to work with. Listen to the following thought process for evidence of achievement motivation.
I know we're only part of the team, but I feel terrific about how far we've come on this. It's been challenging, but if we can accomplish this, we can set a new standard for blood test procedures that will save a lot of lives. Oh, wouldn't that be great?
Let's turn now to need for affiliation images and concerns. Establishing, restoring, or maintaining a close, friendly relationship. Showing concern about the disruption of a positive relationship. Perceiving a setting as a social situation conducive to friendship. Here's a sample of affiliation behaviors. They get energy from associating with people. They will look to make friends at work. They think about keeping in touch. They write more letters and emails, make more personal phone calls. They put people before tasks. They take negative task feedback personally. They empathize or console others when needed or appropriate. They choose friends over experts to work with. The next example illustrates affiliation motive in a person's thought. Let's listen.
Here I am, stuck at my desk trying to finish this report. Now, I know it's got to get done. My supervisor wants it on his desk by 8 a.m., but everybody else, well, they left early. And they're probably down having drinks without me. Well, I'd rather be shooting the breeze with my friends than here in the office.
Now for need for power. These images include showing concern by taking strong, forceful actions that affect others, giving unsolicited aid or advice, thinking about regulating or controlling others' lives, thinking about influencing, persuading, or making a point when the concern is not to reach agreement, thinking about impressing other people or the world at large, thinking about generating strong positive or negative emotions in others, thinking about reputation or position. A sample of power behaviors are seen when people get energy from influencing other people and outcomes. They look for opportunities to have influence and impact. They may prefer to give performance feedback rather than receive it. They use information to control or influence others, even to withholding information. They prefer attention in public and do things for status. They elevate risk in terms of impact on reputation. They seek out persons of high regard with whom to work. The following thought process illustrates imagery present for the power motive.
This report isn't at all what I wanted. My doctorate in the field actually qualifies me much better to finish this up the right way.
Motives by themselves are not good or bad. Working from a power motive doesn't necessarily make one a dictator. Similarly, working from an affiliation motive doesn't make one lazy or oblivious to achieving goals. What is obvious is that the specific tasks are carried out with greater expertise and ease from each of the motives. Being a CEO is easier from the power motive. A preschool professional works best from affiliation motive. As you recall, if you've practiced in your mind's eye 1,000 times, you'll be better at it. This is the edge motives give, as Brad Spencer explains.
An aroused motive is like an itch that needs to be scratched. Now, if you arouse the achievement motive, people are more innovative, more goal-directed. They use feedback more effectively. They become feedback freaks. When affiliation's aroused, people want to be with others. They want to be liked. They're better at that. If power's aroused, people want to influence people more. They make significant differences in how others behave. One is not good or bad. There's a situational place. Each one's appropriate. Research is clear, however. If you're managing individual contributors, engineers, accountants, salespeople, etc., you will have higher performance when you understand and then do the right things to cause achievement motivation to be aroused.
In summary, knowing your own dominant motive and identifying the motives of your employees will help you create the environment and set the tasks that address their motives. And when that happens, they experience increased energy, enthusiasm, and creativity for the job. When you align an individual's needs with the accomplishment of your organization's goals, you are applying the technology of leadership.